Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Karen Solomon. Karen is the author of several books, including Jam It, Pickle It, Cure It, and other cooking projects, Can It, Bottle It, Smoke It, and other kitchen projects, and her latest book, Asian Pickles, Sweet, Sour, Salty, Cured, and Fermented Preserves. Karen, how did you get involved in cooking in the first place? Did you have family members that cooked growing up, and did you get in the kitchen then?
My mother always cooked. She cooked every night, you know, very homespun food, definitely with a Jewish slant to it. You know, that was like her roast chicken, her chicken soup, her kugel. You know, that's the kind of stuff that she would make on a regular basis. Not a lot in the realm of food preservation. In fact, I would say almost nothing from her kitchen. You know, she was not a jam maker or pickle maker or anything like that. She made dinner happen, though.
And how did you, in particular, become involved in and interested in Asian cooking and culture?
Oh, my gosh. I love it. I really do. I lived in Japan for a year, and I've traveled to Thailand a couple of times and took some cooking classes there and traveled throughout other parts of Asia. And I just love it. I can't explain it. Eating the food makes me feel really good. There's just something about a diet based on vegetables and rice and meat, and there's a lot of just really piquant and savory flavors throughout Asian cuisine. You think about the flavor of soy sauce or fish sauce or citrus, miso, you know, Chinese red bean paste, like all of these fantastic fermented foods that are used that just permeate the flavors throughout the continent are just so delicious and alluring to me. I find it irresistible.
I'm wondering how you, because I know you brought some recipes to your book. I'm wondering, like, when you're out there traveling, do you try to get somebody to show you how they make things? And how do you, you know, kind of do that with communication difficulties, with language barriers and things like that?
Well, for one thing, I eat a lot, which is, you know, it's hard work, Jen, but somebody's got to do it, right? I'm fortunate enough to live in San Francisco, where we have this great, diverse Pan-Asian culture here. So it's fabulous for me to be able to actually go to a restaurant and just try a lot of things, which is wonderful. We also, because of the diverse culture here, we also have a lot of markets. And, you know, you'd be surprised how, you know, people who love food are always happy to talk to other people who love food. So I can't tell you how many conversations I had with people, like standing on one side of the deli counter and asking, you know, what's in that and how did you do that and that sort of thing. There is also, never to be underestimated, is the grandmother network. So, you know, through friends, I would get in touch with aunts and uncles and grandparents and just, you know, friends who love to cook and just pepper them with questions. And again, food people love to talk to other food people. They're happy to share their experiences and share their preferences and share their techniques. You know, there's also, of course, other cookbooks and other blogs that I would, you know, cross-reference, you know, one to the other. So some of it came about from personal experience and some of it came out of a fantastic and delicious research project. You know, I don't think anybody could ever comfortably claim that I am the be-all, know-all expert of all things of Asian cuisine. There's just too many permutations and variations. But, you know, as I say in Asian Pickles, it's like a mixtape of some of my favorites, but it certainly doesn't mean I'm an expert on all music, right? So that's kind of how I approach the project.
I noticed, too, like a lot of times you may have something I've never seen before, but you also give ideas on how to use it, which I think is really important because, like, I don't know how many people have bought a jar of preserved lemons and it sits in the refrigerator forever because they just have no idea how to take it to the table.
Absolutely. And that's, I feel like that's essential. And preserved lemons is a great example of that because everyone's like, oh, I've got all these extra lemons from the tree. I'll just preserve them. And then they're just going to sit in the back of the fridge for, you know, until they until they rot. So I think that's really important. If you're going to make something, you should enjoy it, right? And you probably share this problem with me that the refrigerator is some high-end real estate sometimes.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to keep that jar in there for a year or more if it's not going to serve you. So I think knowing how to use what you're making and what it pairs with is really essential.
I also liked how you referred to ferments as pets. Because I have
sometimes boyfriends.
Really, depending on how long. Like if you're making miso, it's really a long-term relationship.
You better
love that one.
Miso, and particularly the Nuka bucket. So Nuka Doko is a bucket of fermented rice bran that you use as sort of a pickling bed to make pickles, you know, in as little as 4 to 8 hours. And as long as you keep the Nuka bed primed and fresh and flavorful and ready to go, you can make pickles anytime very quickly. But getting that bucket started it's a class that I often teach, and I always describe the Nuka bucket as a pet or a boyfriend, depending on your, because it requires maintenance. I mean, some people like set it and forget it pickles, and those are delicious. You know, those are just the quick vinegar, you know, slice it up, pour some brine on it, done kind of pickles. And there's many of those, and those are fantastic. But I always enjoy, like, the lengthier, sort of the farther afield projects. Like my kimchi, I usually let sit 10 days. A Nuka bucket takes 6 weeks to prime, and then, you know, you can use it basically for the rest of your life as long as you take care of it. The miso, several months. Kombucha, you know, several weeks. Like, all these projects just kind of you look after. And yes, they don't meow, they don't bark, but if you can keep a plant alive, you can make miso or keep a Nuka bucket going.
Right. Yeah, the miso is the one for me. It's like occupying the real estate of my Crocs. And so that's like an over a year project. And so I'm kind of, you know, in some ways regretting I know I'll love it when I dig into it, but right now I'm like, oh, I could be doing some sauerkraut or I could be doing some, you know, kimchi in there. And so you're taking up some of my prized real estate.
I'm sorry, Jen.
It's all right.
But I do a lot of ferments these days in those half-gallon canning jars. Keep them out of direct sunlight, and they're lovely because then you can actually see what's going on inside, and the glass is just a good solid conductor of cool, and I'm a big fan of those these days.
Me too. And if you're teaching people who've never done it before and they're not really sure whether they want to invest in having a crock that will hold 5 pounds, then maybe they just want to try a quart or a half gallon, they can get started doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also recommend for a shorter, you certainly wouldn't want to tie this up for a year, but for a shorter project, the crock from inside your crock pot is a great thing. So, and then there's no investment at all. If you already own a crock pot and you've got the nice ceramic insert from that, you can kind of, you know, double down on its usability and use that for a starter ferment too.
Now, one of the items that you had in your recipe book was for umeboshi.
Umeboshi.
And I was really surprised because I had always thought that that was actually made with plums.
Umeboshi. They are plums, but they are a raw green plum. And they have a very short season. Most of those that you see here are imported from Japan. They're only here for about 2 weeks, at least in San Francisco. I can't speak for Humboldt. And they're a green, small plum, and a lot of people use them to make wine. But I'm a huge fan of umeboshi, not just for its sour plum flavor, but also it is the greatest thing if you have an upset stomach or a headache or, you know, like for all the reasons that one might reach out to drink a kombucha. I'm a huge fan of umeboshi. In fact, a lot of people say that just eating one a day, you know, like kind of like an apple a day kind of situation is just great for just feeling good and good digestion.
What are some of the most edgy things you have ever done or made, or the one edgiest thing that you think, wow, I really went over the edge on that?
I would say in Asian pickles, I did waver on, should I include the recipe for pickled squid, for like a fermented squid? Because a squid is, when you ask people their favorite food, it is rare the person who says squid is topping my list, right? So squid is not something a lot of people love to eat anyway. But I feel like that's any art form, any creative expression, people should be challenged a little bit. You know, there's easy listening music and there's difficult listening music, right? So I think it's good to kind of expand your horizons, you know, venture into tastes or flavors or ingredients that maybe you've never pondered before.
And I've got to tell you, Karen, that squid kimchi is on my list of things to make. It's actually on my list of questions to ask you about today, but is on my list of things to make.
Good.
Well, we're running out of time. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Karen Solomon, author of several books on preserving food. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you so much, Jen. My pleasure.
Grapes and the cakes. Hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.